Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovator Insights podcast. This is the podcast where we talk to successful entrepreneurs about their journey from the initial idea all the way to finished product and a successful business, and ultimately building a business with a real impact. So today we're super excited about our guest, Jeff Norling. He's the CEO and founder of Henning Lee, which is a successful Minnesota-based company that creates thoughtful, inspiring products at an affordable price. So without further ado, welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. And you're of Swedish descent too, right? I'm Swedish. I think
I am of Swedish descent. Yes, I am the first offspring. Everybody on my father's side and upward is 100% Swede.
That's great. So, and you live in an area where there are a lot of Swedes.
There's a ton of Swedes. Yeah, absolutely. We got the Vikings, which I guess they're probably not Swedish, but yeah, we got a lot.
That's wonderful. So before we get into the business journey, how did you end up in Minnesota? Have you always been there?
I was born and raised here. I think my grandmother was born here too. She's no longer with us, so I can't, I don't have the ability to ask her, but I believe she was born here. Yeah. My father was, and I was. I was born here and lived here pretty much my whole life. I was out in LA off and on for 3 years while I had a gig out there in this industry. But yeah, been here my whole life.
Yeah. And did you come from an entrepreneurial family? Was starting a business something?
I didn't. Not at all. My father worked in sales at Sears and Roebuck. And then he became a mailman I was 10 years old or something like that. So, and that's what he did until he retired. He worked for the post office as a mailman. And my stepmother worked for the post office. So no, there was no entrepreneurial spirit. I just happened into it, really.
I'm similar. My dad worked in local government and my mom was elementary school teacher, so there was I didn't even think of it, didn't know it was an option until much later in life.
I've asked the same question, Henrik, of people who are entrepreneurs or who own businesses, and I often see that that's the case. They don't come from that background necessarily.
I agree. So how did it happen? Was it straight out of college or did you go to college? How did your...
I messed with college, but I got pretty tired of listening to professors telling me how to think. So I quit pretty early on, but I was actually helping out my brother at a restaurant gig. He works for a company and he's like, hey, we need some help. I'm like, yeah, sure. I was doing some other stuff, working some other jobs. And so I worked there for a summer and then just left. And they didn't need me anymore. And then a few weeks after I left, the owner called and said, hey, you did a great job while you were here, blah, blah, blah. Would you be interested in managing one of our restaurants? And I said, sure. I think I'd be interested in doing that. So I started working for him and started managing a restaurant. And then shortly after I started doing that, I became his operations manager. And then I was overseeing 8 restaurants, I believe it was, maybe 9. Mm-hmm. And then his father passed away and he had a little change of life, change of attitude. Yeah. And so he said, listen, I want to downsize this business and I'll sell you the last 2 restaurants. You decide which ones you want to buy. I'll sell them to you on a note. You just help me run this business and sell these off one by one. Wow. And so I did that until there was 2 left that I had chosen. And then I, over the weekend, switched the names to my first daughter's name. And the next Monday opened up as a new ownership and then started expanding my business from there. And so I was in the restaurant business for a long time.
And what was the name?
I worked crazy hours. They were all named after family members. So no, I don't mind sharing at all. So Sydney May's Cafe and Caterer was the first one. My daughter is Sydney. Her middle name is May. Yeah. I had one named after my brother, my grandmother. Eventually I brought in a business partner and then we had one's named after some of his family members. So it was all family. individual unique names.
And not the
And
same concept many times, but
very
it's
similar
always unique.
concept, very similar concept. They were inside an office building, Henrik. So we were in multi-tenanted 300,000 square foot plus office buildings in the Twin Cities area. So we would go in, we'd negotiate contracts or leases, I should say, I guess, with the building management and say, hey, we're going to be a amenity to your building, in which you can advertise that to prospective tenants, and we're going to provide these services. We're going to be open these hours. In addition, we have catering that we can do for all of your corporate needs, also social catering. And so they were a similar concept, but a little difference tweaked to the special needs of those tenants in that building.
Yeah, and you probably knew the numbers cold after growing up through the ranks like that.
I don't know that I did really. It was a trial and error for sure. It was. It was tough for a long time, but we always we always made money. We were successful. We worked long hours. Eventually, that got the best of me, where I was having, kids calling you at 5 in the morning, if they call you at all, and say, hey, I can't make it because they're out drinking too late or whatever they're doing. And so you're constantly on stage, I call it. And so being on stage 24/7 was just tough. And eventually I decided I wanted to get out of the business and get into something where I really could work hard and kind of make up for any lack of knowledge I might have. Like I could, if I started in this industry, like in consumer goods, gee, I could outwork the next guy and become, successful that way. And so I had this weird mindset, but that's kind of how I decided to get out of the restaurant business and to get into consumer goods, oddly.
Awesome. So the next company was a consumer goods company, but it wasn't Henning Lee, right? This is earlier.
No, it wasn't. After I finally decided I was going to move on, I had a couple of restaurants left, and I opened a company, a brand, I guess, a company called Outset, Outset. And we decided that we were going to be specializing in grilling accessories, and then ultimately we decided we were going to do barware as well, so that we could become a four-quarter business. If you're just selling grilling accessories, you're busy 3 months out of the year, and you're sitting on your hands the rest of the year. So we did that, and we created a really cool brand. And we decided we wanted to, be into gourmet independent specialty stores around the country and around the world, really. At that point in time, a lot of what was available in that market was, the same stuff you'd find at your rest stop or at Target or at high-end kitchen store. We're all selling the same brands, and it didn't make any sense. That's not the way those, consumer goods usually works. So we created a brand that was specifically higher end, and niched for that specialty independent market, and that's what we rolled out and were successful in doing.
So you saw a niche that nobody was addressing.
100% nobody was addressing.
And then at that state, th this was your first venture in consumer goods. So I assume you did not have existing retail relationships then. You developed those
We
from scratch.
didn't. We didn't. Ha yeah, we didn't. And we got lucky a little, for sure. But we put ourselves in the position to get lucky, of course. But we took a pretty bold leap. We started traveling to source, our goods. Started meeting factories over in China and in other parts of Asia, Taiwan. And that was important to us to have those established relationships first. So we did that for 2 years before we ever even ordered any product. So while we were establishing those relationships, we were coming up with the ideas, the designs. And then ultimately we ended up launching in that manner. But yeah, it was a slow process.
And we talked about that a little bit when the first time we met. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of those relationships and how you built those over time?
Yeah, I can. I mean, listen, when I have conversations still to this day with my customers, whoever it might be, big or small, it's very nice to be able to say, hey, I don't purchase products. I don't use any factories that we haven't personally visited. And that's a powerful statement. You know, it's not one that everybody can make, because oftentimes things are just sourced and you don't even know where it's coming from exactly. But not only have we visited the factories, we're also, you know, we have relationships with those peoples. And it's important, and it's been impressive, and it really feels good to say. So I'd say that, you know, is it important? Geez, I still rely on it today. It's still one of my lead discussions.
And I assume that
Discussion
becomes
points.
a key part of your product development journey too. When you have a new idea, do you quickly go to the factories and start getting feedback on
I think, you know, when you and I spoke first, we
it?
talked about that. There's many different ways of designing a product.
Yep.
You can have an idea and you can sit down with an industrial engineer who maybe it's a buddy of yours, maybe it's somebody you hired, maybe it's somebody you got referred to, whatever. But yeah, that is one way of doing it. And that's an expensive way of doing it because you're paying the bill the entire time. Once you have established relationships with factories who you are a proven and good customer of theirs, they've got a design team over there. They've got engineers. In fact, their culture is very much immersed in engineering, right? And so we rely on their engineers to solve problems that we, you know, might see. So yeah, we lean into it deeply.
But of course, they're not necessarily easy to find. And like you said, you spent 2 years developing that relationship, because not every factory has the engineering skills, and you know, some of them are pure assembly or just make some part of it. So finding the right partner, I think, is super important.
I totally agree. And in fact, my partners that I have today are different than what they were in the early 20s or 2000s, excuse me. When we first started traveling, there was about 2002, 2001, I guess it was. And those are different partnerships and they've evolved. In fact, you know, manufacturing has evolved too, as you know. We used to manufacture a lot in Taiwan and not so much anymore.
So this sounds like this first brand Outset was a success, but it ended, or you sold it at some point in time.
It was a success. Yeah. We were also doing, by the way, I think I mentioned this to you before, but we were doing TV retail business as a side bar. So we had the Outset brand. So that was one division. Then we did a kind of a special markets division that you just sort of naturally get into. You know, you start building up a rep force around the country, by the way, you do that by going to trade shows and meeting people and shaking hands and, you know, all that. And those reps bring opportunities, whether it be pointed opportunities or just, hey, I call on this, you know, ABC retailer who's, you know, in this region, or maybe they're national and they've got some need for, you know, whatever kind of goods, you know, could you guys, you know, help in that regard? And so so we have some special markets opportunities that we always were working on. And then we had the TV retail business as well. So we had sort of three buckets that we were working with to make sure that we kept our business healthy.
Yeah, makes sense.
It
And
was
then
imperative, really.
you took a break for a few years before you started
So I eventually
planning.
just got I eventually sold that business in 2010 after being approached a couple times by larger retailers. And if, you know, first I was approached, I think, early on in our Outset career. And it was like, listen, this is, you know, we've been doing this for a year or two. It's way too early. We don't want to sell. We see this growing. And then ultimately in 2010, I had a business partner, and that was becoming, you know, more and more challenging to manage just personally, if I'm being completely honest. And so it was the right opportunity to consider a sale. And a larger company came to us and offered to purchase us, and so we organized a deal and we sold. And then my structure with that company was to stay on for a period of time to help in the transition, and that period of time was 3 years with a 2 year extension on top of that. So I did the 3 years, and then I did the 2 year extension as well. They wanted to keep me on, and the money was decent, so I stayed on. So I did that for 5 years. And then at that point, I decided to leave and start something new.
And very similar to my last company, Boundless. We sold it, and I wouldn't ever have thought I stayed on, but it was, you know, after running a company and all aspects of it, it's kind of nice to take a break, if you will, and you can just focus on doing the work. You don't have to worry about the payroll and the funding, or you know, all the
You
different
stayed on with
aspects
them for
of
how long?
I was there for 4 years, but I had an earn out too, so like you had financial incentives to stick around
Yep.
for a while, and then kids were young, and I, it was I mean, of course it's not a break, you're still working hard, but it's it's a difference between having a job and running a business, owning a business. It's just a different level.
Yeah, I think the there was definitely less stress when I was, running my segment of the business versus owning it and having that ultimate responsibility for yourself, your family, your staff, everything, right?
And then that
Yeah.
said, after 3, 4 years, I started itching again. And I wanted to do something. And then I started Gemba. Was it the same for you? Did you start having a feeling that there was
I don't
kind
think I
of.
did because after that, I actually helped a buddy with some pet business for like 8 months. Just, I was just figuring out what I wanted to do. So I worked with him for a bit. He was a guy from Toronto. And then I was approached by a celebrity chef who I had met years prior. And he needed a senior vice president to run his business. He had an opening. And I came recommended to him. And so I was like, that's fine. I don't mind working for somebody. And I flew out to Australia and met with them and said, listen, if you give me autonomy and allow me to run the things, my way, obviously I'm reporting to you, but provide that autonomy to me. I'm all in. And they ultimately decided that they could do that. And so I did that for 3 years.
Oh.
And that was my bouncing back between Minneapolis and LA.
And what was the name of that company?
Food Fight.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was owned by Curtis Stone,
Got it.
the
So he
Aussie
was a
chef.
celebrity chef, and he'd created a line of products that he was selling to sort of his followers, if you will.
Well, actually, he was selling them on TV retail, so he sold those on HSN and still does to this day very successfully.
Okay, great. Was that your first introduction to shopping TV?
It wasn't, fortunately. At Outset, we had that whole bucket that we were doing. In fact, that was our first purchase order at Outset was from HSN.
Oh yeah.
Prior to us actually launching our grilling accessories, we just so happened to work out that way. It helped actually fund some of what we were doing. And so we kept doing that continually through some of our own brands, through some licensing with some other more regional chefs. And then creating some private label products for HSN as well. So I had a lot of history in that. In fact, the recommendation, the person who recommended me to Curtis Stone was the senior buyer at HSN. So it was my experience at HSN that allowed me
Got it.
to gain that recommendation. But
That's awesome.
once I got into working with Curtis and Food Fights and doing that for 3 years straight and doing nothing but that. We weren't doing any other retail. I mean, that was every single day living and breathing it. And once I ultimately decided after 3 years of traveling back and forth, that was getting pretty crazy, decided to leave that business, then I knew that I wanted to do what we're doing now, which is let's stay focused, let's stay tight, and let's develop product for, a unique segment out there, which is still very unique, in my opinion, TV retail.
And that was the creation of Henning Lee.
It was, yeah.
And when you say we, who were we?
Well, it was me, yeah. But now it's me and my partner Lindsay. We now own the business together, and my daughter works here, and then it's a very small organization, and we've got a gal who's been a long-term associate, friend and advocate for me for about 20 years now. And she's out in Los Angeles, and she works for our organization. Then we basically outsource everything else, our design, marketing. We do a lot of outsourcing.
I mean, I'd say, and I mentioned this the first time we met too. If people haven't heard of Henning Lee, they should go check out your website because it's gorgeous, and the videos you guys have created are professional. You think you're at Williams Sonoma or something. You can't tell that this is like a really small business. You guys have done a tremendous job.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I think there's some That's good in some ways, but at the same time, when you watch, when you go to the website and you watch our personal video, we talk about the fact that we're a family business. We introduce you to our small town that we live in today. But that was a, that was an investment to make that video
I
and
bet.
to make it professionally and to introduce us. But I think it is the difference between, that's the feeling we want to evoke is when somebody comes to the website. It's like, okay, these guys are buttoned up. I've got some trust in
Exactly.
them.
Yeah. I mean, if you see that, you can tell you spent money creating that, and by association, you would assume that these products are going to be great, high quality products. That's awesome. And did you guys use agencies for that, or was that internal, or?
No, 100% outsource that. Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. I've got a rep, manufacturer's rep on the East Coast, in the Pennsylvania area that works for us with QVC. Now, obviously, we work with QVC direct all the time, and that's one of our biggest customers. But the rep group is called GLA, and a good friend of mine owns it. And through them, they introduced us to some characters who were in the B-roll space, animation space. And of course, we had some of those relationships from before as well when I was working with Food Fight. But vetted that out and found a couple guys who were, doing their own thing and had some cool ways of shooting, and invited them out to our house, and we spent a couple days and put it together.
Yeah, looks great. So today you're selling, can you give us like a range of how many products, how many channels?
So, we were talking just before we started rolling here about tariffs a little bit. So, my answer would be a lot different if we didn't have tariffs going on, because, well, so TV retail, we do that, and that's a constant product-based business, Henrik. Meaning you can be a brand, and you want to be a brand, but it's product-based. It's just, you don't roll out as a brand and say, gee, we have a little of everything for your grilling accessories. You know, you have two or three SKUs. That's it. You go deep, you don't go wide. We sell the TV retail, and early this year, we brought in some product into the United States to distribute to a more broad-based distribution strategy. So we're going to do independents, some direct-to-consumer through Amazon. And that's right when the whole tariff war started. We had no idea what the product was going to be landing at anymore from a cost standpoint, whether or not that could be really realized at retail.
That's
It
brutal.
wouldn't have been. Yeah, it was completely brutal. So it put the brakes on everything. And since then, the can's been kicked down the road enough so that we still don't really have an answer. So it's hard to make those plans. So we've got a very limited SKU base that we are selling to independent retailers around the country as well. So that's like your mom and pop gift shops and kitchen stores around the United States through manufacturers reps. And if you go to our website, you see a mix of products that we have on TV retail shelves, or not shelves, I guess, but in TV retail, and also a mix of product that you'd see on shelf at your local store, or Amazon or eKitchen World's another one of our e-tailers. So yeah, we're getting back into that traditional retail space a little bit, which I really enjoy. I really like it. And we're growing that SKU base by probably 2 to 4 SKUs every quarter. So by the time we grow up here in a few years' time, I think we're going to be a pretty unique product offering again. That's going to be sort of mid to upper end, and just unique SKUs, SKUs that really fit onto the retailer shelves in terms of when they look at a catalog, I want them to say, I can see every one of these uniquely fitting onto my shelf. It's not a matter of, gee, do I buy this from Henny Lee or do I buy this from company B? They both offer similar items. We don't want to be that. We want to offer something that's unique and earns its way onto the shelf. So that's sort of what we want to be when we ultimately grow up to a 30, 40, 50 SKU based company.
That's great.
Still doing it, still growing it.
Yeah, the tariffs have been brutal for a lot of our customers. And just like you said, it's not just if you knew what it was going to be, then you could plan for it, and you could, diversify your supply chain, or find a different country, find a different factory, find a way to Assume some of the price increases maybe, but we don't know what you're going to get. It's almost impossible to run a business that way.
I'd say it is impossible. And I don't know, listen, if tomorrow they said it's going to be 85% on, the country in which I manufacture mostly, that's as much as, at least now we landed, that's great. That's still going to kill the business. And so, but at least, there'd be, I would know. Now I can go do something else if I have to.
Yeah, exactly.
But at this point, yeah, it's very challenging to invest in the future, I think, is the biggest problem, Henrik. Not only for us, but also for our retail partners.
Yeah, we saw that, firsthand. I think, after Liberation Day, we had our biggest lead month ever because so many people are looking for help. So initially it was a boost, and then I say, particularly after the 50% in India came in, and the Chinese ones went up and down, it becomes impossible to make a decision. Last thing you want to do is spend a year and a half or 2 years and build new relationships and diversify your supply chain, and then find out that it's a 80% tariff on that country now.
Well, or if you place your orders with your factories and you put 30% down, and then they're ready to ship, and you pay the remaining, that's your money's gone at that point. Now it's underwater. It might take 30 to 60 days to get into your distribution center, and in that time, tariffs can change. And now, when the goods land, and U.S. Customs has their hands out, you don't have that cash. There's no way. So it can literally put small businesses out of business.
It's a real problem, for sure. Okay, let's switch gear. I could talk about it for hours,
Yeah, me too.
but one thing
Complain about it.
that's I think makes you very different than a lot of our guests. Obviously, lately with Amazon and Shopify, a lot of folks come into the product consumer product business and very just online focused. And then there's some that go, straight to retail. More oftenly, they launch, I'd say, online, and then they go to retail unless they have existing relationships. And then, they're a smaller percentage of folks like you that sell on Home Shopping Network, and like you talked about with your first company, travel around and meet different retailers. And I think it's a bit of a lost art and forgotten discipline almost today. There's literally a million businesses start on Amazon every year, and they make it so easy to start a business, but they certainly, that doesn't mean that you're going to build a successful business just because you can launch it.
I agree, and I've got buddies who are doing nothing but D2C, through Amazon. And my feeling is, they're weeks or months away from going out of business potentially. It's just it's once they get established and they've got a wider SKU base, there's some solid foundation there. But I see them throwing just a lot of money at the pay per click and their advertising, and with the just the prayer that it's going to turn into sales, and the second it doesn't, or if they get turned off for some weird reason by Amazon because something is amiss, they're in a panic, man. It's crazy. And it's just, for me, nothing I wanted to completely rely on. It doesn't mean I want to ignore it, but I don't want to rely on that. I want to have business partners.
You're one policy change or one algorithm change away from your business completely changes, and it's out of your control. So while on one hand it's very attractive that they have these massive audience of millions of people, but they're also become very, very good at extracting every penny out of the sellers they have on their platform.
I would completely agree. I would completely agree. Yeah, we I guess, yeah, I don't ever see it changing for me. Business to business versus business to consumer is will always be a part of what we're doing. Probably the biggest part.
Yeah, and I think sometimes maybe you miss the core. It's like you've built a brand, you started with a customer in mind, you built the product line around that specific customer. I think sometimes the ease of launching something on Amazon makes you take shortcuts and not really do that. Amazon is largely search based. You sell people that people are searching for, and and you're not necessarily building a brand. And I think that that's it's really just a channel. So a lot of people say that they want to start an Amazon business. That's kind of weird in itself, right? Amazon is just a channel.
I've recently been approached by Temu.
Okay.
They're actually starting a, I don't know what the terminology is exactly, but like local warehouse shipping essentially.
All right.
So, you think of Temu, at least in my world, I think of Temu and I think of products coming directly from the factory. Not necessarily hasn't necessarily been inspected by a third party facility. There's no real guarantees behind it. It's going to probably arrive in weeks versus a couple of days, that kind of thing. But with the de minimis that was part of the tariff issue enacted, that put a lot of that to end, and now Temu has changed to trying to sort of do a little bit of an Amazon model. And it's a slow burn, but they're bringing on some partners and some brands, and they reached out and we had a nice discussion. I'll see where it goes, but yeah, there's. It's a weird business. It really is different.
And I've heard they're more aggressive on fees too. I think Temu and Shein and even
Yeah, so you know
TikTok, they
about it.
charge a little less fees than Amazon, I think.
Yeah, they threw out a number of, to me that was the same as Amazon, but that just was a categorically the same number. But I've heard the same as you. It's for whatever reason in our consumer goods, housewares area, it happens to be the same over at Temu as it is at Amazon.
Okay, got it.
But to your point, I'm all in on working with retailers and serving their needs and their customer needs, through developing product that is unique, earns its position on the shelf, has great packaging, tells a story quickly, good colorways, that whole everything that was required. That's really my MO.
Well, you've done a great job. Really impressed with what you built. Before we wrap up, first, you want to share anything about what you're excited about this coming year and where people can find you and learn more about your business?
Yeah, well, listen. Again, I wish I could be more excited about the independent business. I mean, I am excited about it, but I just don't know how it's going to work out with the tariffs, right? But we are launching another brand on HSN. So we haven't been selling to HSN except for doing some private label stuff there. I've been largely selling to QVC, but now those two are, under one roof. QVC Group owns both networks, and now they're all in Pennsylvania. They all moved there. So in terms of like on-air support and the hosting and all that kind of stuff, it's all happening in one area now. And with that, we've developed some new brands, and we're rolling out a new brand next year, at least one new brand on HSN that we created. And we're also working on the final details of a licensing deal with a celebrity chef that will be launching on HSN in 2026 as well. So
Right. So this would
yeah,
be a separate brand from Henning Lee.
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Great. Great.
But while we're still doing Henning Lee, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So before we wrap, where can people find you? HenningLee.com, right?
HenningLee.com. Yes. Yep. That's everything. You can click on the items that are available. Generally speaking, if they're not available, they're not on there. So it's a constantly evolving site. And when you click on there, it's either going to bring you to QVC, which is, that means that item is exclusively on QVC, or it's going to bring you to a consumer site, like an Amazon or an eKitchen World or something of that nature. And that means that we're distributing that item ourselves underneath our brand from our warehouse, which is in Memphis, Tennessee.
All right.
But yeah, HenningLee.com tells the whole story, has everything there.
Awesome. So before we wrap, any advice to our listeners? We have a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, a lot of entrepreneurs building their business. If you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
Dude, the one piece of advice I would and it's not easy, but it's like you got to reach out and you got to be open to having conversations. You're never going to do it completely on your own. If you do, God bless you, but it's going to take a long time. So even before you have relationships, you need to go out there and develop relationships, and you do that by getting on LinkedIn, networking, reaching out cold. I think you reached out cold to me originally.
Yeah,
And I still
I did.
appreciate that, by the way. Seeing people reach out in a thoughtful way, right? Like, hey, can we chat? And so I would say that's it's imperative. Reach out to people in the different areas in which you think they might be able to help you, and just start having some conversation.
Great. Awesome. Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to
Thank
me.
you,
I
Henrik.
know
Yeah,
our
man.
listeners appreciate it. Thank you, and best of luck in the year ahead.
Thank you. Same to you.
All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products, and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your posts and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.